Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah, and no therapist Kelly today. She is in Paris. But we have a special co-host here today, Misty B, Misty Barnes. She's been with us for three times.
Yeah,
You've been on the air with three times. Mm-hmm. Yes, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
We had so much fun driving in together today.
We did. Yes, we did.
Misty is very funny lady. She's a very funny lady.
No pressure now.
No pressure now.
Makes me think funny. Up.
No, be funny today. No.
Not today. We're talking about twins, and that's serious stuff.
Serious stuff, but not quite yet. Tell me,
okay.
How was your week?
It was great. It's only Tuesday. It sort of feels like Friday already.
Does it?
Yeah. You know, I've noticed that I've spent a little more time on social media than I want to, and I feel like it just kind of drains the any kind of concept of time.
Right. And sucks it away.
Yeah, it does.
It does. Yeah. I know. Sometimes you can look down and go, oh, 3 hours have passed, and what have I done?
Yes.
Nothing.
Yes. And people are not nice anymore.
Yeah, that's what you were saying.
Yeah, they're not very nice.
No.
Yeah. I have a story. I don't know if I should tell it or not. Do we have time?
Tell it.
So there's this thing that happened in Georgia, which is not the state, the country. It was a chairlift started going backwards at about 50 miles an hour, and all these people were thrown from the chairlift. And all the comments, it was on CBS, they showed it, all the comments were, you know, it's hysterical.
Oh,
people are like, bodies are flying. And I said, you know, I never, ever comment on anything on Facebook. I just don't, because I want to stay out of the melee. But for some reason, I was skiing, and I was happy, and I was like, yeah. And all these people were making the comments, and I said, only an idiot who's never been on a chairlift would laugh at that. So this guy... The F word, calls me all kinds of names, called me a bitter hag.
Oh, my.
Says that my hair, my roots are bad, which they're not, because I pay good money
they're
to
beautiful.
Keep them. Thank you. And then I looked at his picture, and it was like all, he was like this kid from Minnesota who was a, he's a goalie. And I got into it, you know, and I went, why am I getting, and then this other kid jumps on and he goes, listen, you're too old for this thread.
Oh, dear.
Go back to sipping mimosas and wine. And I just lost it. I was like, who the hell are you? Just because I'm older, I don't get an opinion. You know, so it became this thing. And I went, oh, it really upset me for like 2 days. I was upset about this. And I thought, why did I engage in it? I know better. It's a vortex that will take you down.
It's true.
And I can see why if someone's sensitive that they would really be taken out by it. It's crazy.
Yeah, I just can't stand it either when I see stuff about people just making fun of other people and just being hateful and mean. It's just awful. I hate it. Yeah, so yeah.
Makes me want to hurt them.
Yeah. Do not say that
punch
on air.
Them.
Oh,
okay.
Right. You're not a client.
Yeah,
I don't have to report anything.
I should be, though.
Oh, okay. On a lighter note,
I
actually had a great last week. I think I had told our audience last week, but you didn't hear, that I took my stepmom out for her 93rd birthday last week. So my older niece had flown in from Hong Kong that morning. Mm. So she met us there, and my sister and my other niece, and so it's a five ladies at this lovely restaurant, and she was so happy. Mm. It was just a moment in time where she just could get out of her own way, because she's always thinking about wanting to be with my dad, and it's really sad. So it's like, please just hold on to this moment. Remember this moment, how rare it is for all of us to be able to be here together. Mm-hmm. And we did a little wine country day on Friday. The weather supported everything being beautiful, and it was awesome with my two nieces, and it was awesome. And then Christopher's daughter came out from Newport with her best friend on Sunday. So it was a family week.
Nice.
Yeah.
That sounds enjoyable.
It was very fun. So back to the work world. Yes.
Yeah, we're slaving over a hot mic, as they say.
Yes. No, this is super fun. This is always the highlight of my week. So anyway, to catch us up, from last week, we had Julie Simon, who has a master's and an MBA, and she's the author of When Food is Comfort and the Emotional Eater's Repair Manual. She had founded the popular Los Angeles-based and online 12-week emotional eating recovery, and she did a great job for us. She told us all about, you know, the kinds of things that you know, we overeat over and why we overeat and how to change those mechanisms in the brain to actually rewire the brain, which was really fascinating. So she had a lot of good tips, and it was a really fun show. We get to share some of our own past eating disorder issues, and she was very helpful. So if you missed that show, please take a look at Julie Simon. You can find her at overeatingrecovery.com. And today, drum roll. Okay, I like it. You're very animated today, Misty. Today we have Dr. Nancy Siegel, who received a BA in psychology and literature from Boston University and an MA and a PhD in the social sciences and behavioral sciences from the University of Chicago. From 1982 to 1991, she was a postdoctoral fellow and research associate at the University of Minnesota, affiliated with the well-known Minnesota study of twins reared apart. She's currently professor of psychology at CSU Fullerton, blah, 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 and director of the Twin Studies Center, which she founded in 1991. She's authored over 200 scientific articles and book chapters, as well as several books on twins. Her latest book, Twin Misconceptions, describes the false beliefs and fables surrounding twins and provides much needed correction. Her sixth book, Accidental Brothers, follows the life histories of two sets of identical Colombian twins who were inadvertently exchanged at birth and provides a number of interesting research findings. Boy, do we have a lot to talk about. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Dr. Siegel. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And it's a pleasure to have you. This is so exciting. Twins are such a interesting topic, because I mean, as a layperson who hasn't had twins, I have one daughter, and Misty, you haven't had no twins,
nada,
no singles. Okay. But you know, so my father, actually, he was a twin. He was his brother was a twin, so we don't know much about his family history, though. But let's just launch in, and we're going to talk about both books today. But why did you decide to write Twin Misconceptions?
Yeah. Yes. Well, the reason I wrote that book is that there is just so much misinformation out there, so many fables, so many false beliefs about twins, and I decided that I should gather all of them. I gathered 70, actually, and there are some that I still didn't get a hold of, and then really set the record straight. There are so many families having twins. Twin rates are going up at astronomical rates because women are delaying the childbearing years and because in vitro fertilization and other reproductive techniques are available that have a higher chance of producing twins than non-twins. So everyone just needs to know so much more about this. Educators, doctors, people who come into contact with twins. So I really just wanted to set the record straight. And in writing this book, Deborah, what I did was I structured it so that I would list a fable or list a misconception. I would give it a rating of true or plausible or not true. Then I'd provide a short answer for people in a hurry, and then a much more detailed scientific explanation for people who needed a little more information.
Oh,
so I'm very excited about it.
Oh, it's amazing. Now, you yourself, do you have twins or do you have children?
No, I don't have twins, but I am a twin. I'm a fraternal twin with a sister who looks nothing like me and acts nothing like me. And that is, in fact, how I got into this subject, because even at a young age, I was just so struck by the fact that we were being raised together at the same time and shared our birthday and shared our friends and shared our school and our summer camp, but we were so different. We had different interests, different hobbies. Really, we were like two kids who could have been completely unrelated. And so that's what got me into these really fascinating nature-nurture questions and has made twin research such a professionally interesting and personally meaningful topic.
That's awesome. Maybe that's a great segue into describing for our audience what is the difference of the different kinds of twins.
Great question. So there are two types of twins, identical and fraternal. And when we talk about the natural twinning rates, the identical twins are about one-third of those, and fraternals are the other two-thirds. Identical twins result when a single fertilized egg divides somewhere within the first 2 weeks after conception, and the twins share all their genes in common with some rare exceptions, and they're always two boys or two girls. The fraternal twins are fairly evenly divided between the same-sex twins, two boys or two girls, and the male-female pairs. And they share 50% of their genes on average, which is exactly the same as ordinary siblings born years apart. But the difference, of course, with fraternal twins is that they share the womb and they come into the world at the same time, so that many of their developmental experiences are the same. And we as scientists are so lucky to have these two types of twins because it gives us a very simple and very elegant way of studying genes and environments. If identical twins are more alike in traits such as height, weight, running speed, intellect, relative to fraternal twins, this tells us the genes do make some contribution to that trait. And now we have studied hundreds and hundreds of traits, and what is so fascinating is that the vast majority of them do have some substantial genetic influence, which, you know, really has changed so much about the way we think about development and child rearing and so many things about how we got to be the way that we are.
Dr. Siegel, hi, it's Misty.
Hi, Misty.
Hi. So I have a question. One of the things that I've always been taught or heard is that the twins usually skip a generation. Is that true or is that not true?
Well, that's one of my myths, in fact. And it's possible. Twins could skip generations, but there is no rule that says they must. I think what happened is that way back there was a family, maybe two families, whose twins skipped generations, mm-hmm. and that became the going wisdom. But there is certainly very little scientific evidence for that. It's not as if we can track twins down generations like we can track eye color or diseases or something like that. There's just no scientific evidence that that's the way that the genetics of twinning works.
Okay.
I want to go back for a moment and talk a little bit more about fertility and the types of different twins. Can you have identical twins in a fertility case? Don't they usually put more eggs and such? Maybe you can just describe a little bit about fertility.
Yeah, here's the interesting thing about that. So when women are infertile, typically they have two eggs implanted, maybe three, depending upon their age and depending upon their reproductive histories. So the fraternal twinning rate has really gone up astronomically mm-hmm. because of in vitro. Mm-hmm. But we find that when we micromanipulate the egg outside the womb, which is what you do in vitro fertilization, this has also led to a steady increase in identical twinning, not as dramatic as fraternal twins, but still a steady increase, which is not something that was anticipated. So let me just tell you what the twinning rates look like. In 1980, about 1 in 60 people in Western countries were twins. Today, 1 in 33. So
wow.
It's just about doubled. Yes,
that's
just about
crazy.
Doubled. And that's why just not twins in families, but I think educators, teachers, psychologists, bereavement counselors, camp counselors, just about everybody has to have a greater sensitivity to twins, their development, their welfare. You know, many times parents who have twins have financial concerns. And you can see why, because they may go from zero children to two or one child to three, and that's incredible. But now some colleges are offering two-for-one twin scholarships. Some clothing companies are offering. This is a serious problem. And
yeah.
Some clothing companies are giving you discounts on second outfits. I think this is marvelous.
That
I'd like to
marvelous.
See more things done along those lines.
I can tell you something. My sweetheart has fraternal twins, and he was broke all the time because college, you know, $100,000 a year for each one, it gets very expensive.
Crazy, especially when you had only planned for one.
Yes, planned for one. Yeah.
But his
wife was a twin,
that's why I think
too.
Some schools really deserve a lot of credit for offering these kinds of programs.
So can I back up for a second on that? When the three eggs are fertilized, the three eggs are implanted into the woman, so the two, I know this is a basic question, but the so are you saying that it would become a fraternal twin because those are two separate eggs, but they're still delivered
correct.
By the same...
Okay. Correct. Now, if three are implanted, it could turn out to be fraternal triplets. But typically, when in vitro fertilization was first introduced in this country, that was 1981.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, doctors have gotten pretty good at implanting just one baby or one fertilized egg because... You know, twins are a high-risk, precarious birth. It's a strain on the children, the strain on the parent. So one child is probably optimal. But nevertheless, if you plant two or three embryos, it's luck that two or three are going to take. Mm. And they're completely full siblings in this respect because they're, as you say, they result from one separate egg and one separate sperm,
okay.
Which is exactly how full siblings originate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wow. And it can be really hard on the mom, too, carrying multiples.
It can be. But, you know, we're learning a lot more about how to manage these pregnancies. And let me just tell you one thing. I have had a case where a mother naturally conceived quadruplets, But what happened was they were born as two sets of identical twin boys.
Wow.
So apparently what happened was she conceived fraternal twins, and each one of those eggs split, which has kind of made us wonder if the two types of twins are not linked somehow. I mean, we don't know. It could be in some families that they are. But the point is that that's a very interesting combination of two rather rare events. So, yeah, you can have triplets where two are identical and one is fraternal. I've studied a number of such cases.
Wow, that's amazing. This is a little bit off topic, but I think it's relevant. I don't know how much you know about this subject, but what do you think has been the most profound scientific awareness as a result of studying twins in the mental health field in terms of schizophrenia, depression?
Oh, sure. No, I can certainly address that question. I think that the most important thing is to underline the fact that genetic influence does contribute substantially to mental illness, or although it can vary across the different types of mental illness. For example, in the 50s and 60s, it was widely believed that schizophrenia came about because of the way mothers treated their children. Yeah. Now, I will say that mothers who raise children with behavioral problems probably do react to them in certain sorts of ways, treat them differently than other kids. But it's not that the mother's imposing the treatment. It's rather the mother's reacting to the kid's behaviors. So we now know that with schizophrenia, the chance, if you're an identical twin, the chance of your twin brother or sister being affected is about 40%. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting because you think, well, they have the same genes. Why isn't it not 100%? That's because environment clearly plays a role, too. And the environment is not just the area we're born into, but the environment also includes all the prenatal factors to which we were exposed while the mother was pregnant.
As well as, I would think, the broader culture, too, right?
I mean, so, you know, yeah. Your rearing home, your culture, of course, all those things can be important.
Wow.
This is such a huge, something that I know nothing about. I'm doubly speechless. But I wonder, is this a growing field? I mean, the study is...
Oh, yes. Twin studies are just becoming so popular, they're being used by people in fields that you thought would never use them. For example, economics, sociology, because they can address fundamental questions that could not be addressed otherwise. When I was at the University of Minnesota, we worked with an industrial organizational psychologist who was interested in job satisfaction. So we gave the twins many, many inventories that asked about happiness on the job. And it turned out that job satisfaction has about a 30% genetic influence. And there were colleagues of ours back in the 80s who were interested in social attitudes, what you think of the death penalty or abortion or things of that sort. And it turns out that social attitudes have about a 50% genetic influence. Religiosity, wow. How invested are you in religious activities? Not your affiliation, but how much you go to church or how much religion is a part of your daily life. And that also turns out to be about 50%. So the twin studies are teaching us so much about how we develop and how we got that way and why two children in a family can end up being so different. Why when a mother or father do one thing for one kid, it doesn't work for the other necessarily. And that's why I always say that parents of one child are environmentalists and parents of two are geneticists, because the parents of two children realize just how different they are and how different they are from the very beginning. Some of my smartest colleagues are parents of fraternal twins, I must say.
Fascinating. If you just tuned in, we are talking with Dr. Nancy Siegel, and she's sharing with us about her book, Twin Myth Conceptions, and that is MYTH. Myth conceptions. Why is it? That's hard on the tongue, I have to say, when you say it 10 times.
I know
I love
it's hard
though.
On the tongue, but it captures the essence of the book quite
well. Oh,
and
yes.
And that's why I did it. I find that whenever I type that, my computer does an instant spell check on
it
that.
It does,
but,
I know.
But Twin Myth Conceptions is exactly what the book is about. As you said, the subtitle is False Beliefs, Fables, and Facts About Twins. And so I just wanted to have something that told you what the book was about.
No, I love it. I'm just teasing you. It's just that's hard for me to say. It's common to say
the
word that
we
know. I love it. So this is great. And if you can, because I know you said you had about 70 myths, maybe you could share with us the top five, maybe the most dangerous, if you will, the ones that really can cause people to just not be right.
Yeah. Sure, I can certainly share a few with you. One is that many people assume the twins have ESP, that they can communicate telepathically. And there is absolutely no evidence for that. I reviewed it very, very carefully. You know, we hear about the hits and not the misses. If a twin worries about their sister or brother every single day, well, one of those days the twin might well be in an accident. And then they say, aha, I knew it all along. There's no evidence for this. Identical twins often behave as if they have telepathy because they think a lot alike. They complete each other's sentences sometimes. They respond to the world in the same way. So let's just take the stance that twins do not have ESP. Another very common myth is that twins should always be separated in school. Somehow educators got this misguided notion that twins will not grow up to be individuals unless they are in completely separate locations. But having worked with mothers of young twins, I know how traumatic it can be for some kids to leave home. And then to have to be separated from their familiar sibling in a new setting is very traumatic. I remember going through that when I first went to kindergarten. And so now what we're encouraging educators to do is to keep kids in the same classroom if they want to be. I mean, you should have no policy regarding twins, just like you have no policy regarding single children. You take each pair as it comes. But if you put kids in the same classroom, you can put them at different tables so they can meet other kids, but they still have a sense of security from seeing other people around. We've talked already about twins skipping generations. Another common one is that many people think that identical twins have one placenta and fraternal twins have two. Well, how do you like this? The early splitting identical twins, it's believed that when twins split relatively early after fertilization, there are two separate placenta. But we do know that at least one-third of identical twins do have two placentas. And fraternal twins always have two, except that in about 40 to 50% of the cases, the placentas grow together and look fused, so it gives a superficial impression of one. So many people, when they see that they have identical twins, they'll say, well, they look alike, but they must be fraternal because they have two placentas. That's incorrect. So that's a very, very common myth.
Uh-huh.
What else do you want to know?
Oh, I just want to go back to when you said that they should be separated in schools, that's a big common myth. It's funny, I was thinking, boy, I was traumatized when my best friend was transferred to another school when I was in grammar school. It was like, I can only imagine for, you know, family members.
Well,
that seems like a silly...
This thing, there's some literature out there, Dr. Deborah, that says that when friends go to school together, they do better. They're more lively, they're less clingy as regards to the teacher, more exploratory, and no one worries that they will not be individuals. So why are we worried about twins?
Right. Uh-huh. And is there, though, any sort of psychological experiences that you're aware of where the twins do struggle somewhat about keeping a separate identity as they're growing up, even if they are fraternal?
Yes. I mean, you run the whole thing. There are exceptions. Most twins get through adolescence and childhood and adulthood quite well. Twins are not more often in psychological clinics than anybody else. But some twins do have struggles with identity when they look exactly alike and people confuse them all the time. And probably depending upon their personalities, this can be maybe hard to take for some people. But others really enjoy it. And some twins flock to those twins festivals and really enjoy, you know, being a part of this kind of identical, if you think about it as Noah's Ark, where everybody looks exactly alike and they all come up in twos. Some people really enjoy that. So it really just depends. It just depends.
Fascinatingly, we had a triplets group on the show once to talk to them their experiences. And the most fun of their story was talking about how they were able to con different boyfriends believing that they were one of the other ones.
That's a real advantage in some cases because somebody can substitute for the other one if it's inconvenient.
Absolutely.
And another real advantage that twins have is, identicals that is that if one needs an organ transplant, the other one is the ideal donor.
Oh, sure.
And there are a number of cases like that I've come across in my career. Now, there can be problems, there can be infection, there can even be rejection in some cases, but for the most part, it's an incredible advantage to have a person with whom you share complete genetic identity. really is.
So, Dr. Siegel, now that we're having so many more twins as the past as we have had in the past, I would assume that they're going to be, you know, nurtured differently and raised differently. And so the one of the myths I know is that they're all twins are, especially if they're identical, are super close. And so it seems like maybe there might be, I can see a potential thing where if we're starting to raise individuals, twins as more individuals, and they're not that super identical closeness, you know, that mini-me that we have these fantasies about, do you find that, or do you think that's going to impact the new information that we have? Is it going to impact the relationships of twins in the future and how we raise them, and should it change?
Well, I'll tell you, I think that we have gone kind of full circle in that respect. Back in the 60s, there used to be this idea of twin closeness, raising them together and dressing them alike and all that sort of thing. And then people kind of began to treat them as if they weren't even twins at all. But now we're coming around to this more balanced view, which I think is the healthiest, and that's to allow them to enjoy their twinship, not just identicals, but fraternals and opposite sex twins too. It's a very special bond to come into the world with somebody and share your birthday, although I will say that the relationship differs across the different twin types, and it is closest among identicals. That's not a myth at all. That's something that's been shown in numerous twin studies. But I think that now when parents ask me about these kinds of issues, I tell them, look, you know, twins need some separation, but they also need their togetherness. If they want to dress alike on occasion, that's fine. You just don't want them to get dependent upon each other because of their identical looks as a way of attracting attention and feeling comfortable in social situations. You want them to feel comfortable alone, but they should enjoy their twinship. They really should. And I can tell you that having worked with so many reared apart twins who didn't know they were twins until they were adults, when they meet, most of them have very good relationships and really regret the lost time that they had. And I also think that because twins are showing us about genetic influences on behavior, that parents are becoming increasingly smart in this respect. I'm really impressed when I talk to parents these days. And they really allow twins to be themselves. And they understand that fraternal twins will look a lot different, will act a lot differently. And they don't force fraternal twins to do the same things as identical twins, which you really don't have to force. In fact, with identical twins, if you encourage them to take separate pathways, a lot of times they're not happy, and they will gravitate toward the things that they like, which tend to be common things.
Well, they're sharing 100% of their genes, so it's right.
That's right.
Isn't that
right? Here's another myth. It's not strict genetic identity, and the reason I say that is that you can have errors in cell replication. You can have mutations that occur after birth so that one twin may have a somewhat different DNA pattern than the other. But for the most part, these things do not create major differences between twins unless there is some real genetic mistake that happens in the womb. So, for example, let's take identical females. They both have two X chromosomes. Well, let's say that early on in gestation, for some unknown reason, the X chromosome gets lost in one twin. So this sister only has an X and a blank for her sex chromosomes. This twin will have Turner syndrome, and so she will not develop the same way that her twin sister would, but other than that, they would be genetically the same.
Okay.
So these are fascinating things. Also, there are many prenatal environmental influences that might make twins less alike than they should be. So, for example, with twins who share a placenta, and I'm talking about the identicals here, when twins share a placenta, there can be a mutual circulation system that develops between them so that one literally bleeds into the other. This can be very dangerous if severe and not detected early on. And there are laser technologies that we can apply while mothers are still pregnant. But this, in a more mild form, this might make for differences in size, differences in health, things of that sort. So there are many things that can make twins different. And that's why I'm so impressed with how similar they are, despite these things that are working to make them differ.
It's interesting when you were talking before about the old thinking and the new thinking. It's always fascinating to me in science when something becomes a hot topic and people look at it. It seems like it goes from one pendulum swing to the next until we find that centerpiece that says, no, actually, both of those things need to happen. Both of those things need to work out.
That's the beauty of science, because it's kind of a self-correcting process. So it's wonderful to see those kinds of things happening.
So will identical twins then, from what you were just saying, always have the same blood type, or could they actually end up with different blood type depending on the mom's blood type?
I mean, I suppose the mutation is possible, but they will have the same blood types. Uh-huh. And something else I should point out, just because two twins, say, are both A positive or O negative, really doesn't tell you much. You really need to do a DNA analysis, which can be done for only about $125, $150 mm-hmm. a pair these days. And what they do is they look for 15 different DNA markers, areas in the genome that are virtually impossible to replicate in people if you're not identical twins. And that's the best thing. And I really think that all the parents out there listening, all the twins out there listening, should undergo such a test. It tells you so much about yourself and your medical life history. If your twin becomes sick for some reason, what are your chances? Parents can understand children's development a lot more. Identity issues come into play. I think it's so important for everyone to know what kind of twins we have. And I really think that hospitals should get in the practice of doing DNA analysis for every same-sex pair.
I love it.
That's what I think.
Was there anything in your upbringing that caused you, like a turning point that said, I am so fascinated with science? I understand that the direction of your scientific mind went toward understanding twins, I'm sure, among other things. But was there any kind of key point? Like, I remember when I distinctly decided I was going to be a psychologist. It was like an mm-hmm. absolute moment in time. There was no doubt in my mind, mm-hmm. and it was just right. what I did.
Yeah, I can remember it was when I was a senior in college and I was taking a psychology class and I was asked to write a paper on personal adjustment. And so I dipped into the twin literature for the first time because I was interested in these school questions, separate versus common classrooms. And I remember enjoying the work so much in a way I hadn't enjoyed any other topic. And that was the moment when I decided to become a research psychologist and focus on twins completely. And over the years, I've had professors sometimes who'd say, you know, time to make a change, but I really never have. I have studied an unusual kinship called virtual twins, and I'd love to hear from some of your listeners if they have any or are any. Virtual twins are same-age, unrelated individuals raised together since birth. They've come about, say, if a family adopts two children at the same time, or they have one biological child and adopt another one who's very close in age. And these kids tell us with a pure estimate of environmental influence. How much alike are you, given that you share your family environment but not your genes? So they've been a real interesting comparison, as have these young Chinese twins separated at birth that I've been mm-hmm. studying here. You know, the one-child policy in China indirectly separated so many twins, and we don't know how exactly, but I'm able to find 23 pairs. And so they've been adopted by different families in the U.S. and in Europe and Canada. And I study them. And what's great about these studies is that I can study the kids from an early age rather than waiting till adulthood. So that's been really a great source of fun and fascination for me.
So you have a twin sister, yes?
Right.
A fraternal. Yeah. And what does she do, and how does she feel about your research? And what's a little bit about you guys?
She's an attorney in New York City, and she thinks that twin research is great. She's been a very supportive partner. Sends me articles all the time. This is the great thing. I get articles from people all the time, but my sister is one of the more faithful ones in that respect. And so it really helps me to keep up on what's going on in the world of twins out there in social media.
I love it. Yeah. And just to clarify, too, for our audience, that a lot of the different twin studies are done in various combinations of twins who are raised together, identical twins who are separated at birth, fraternal twins mm-hmm. raised together, and fraternal twins separated at birth, so that you get all those variations to really flesh out what's
exactly
genetic.
That's a very powerful design, in fact. Mm-hmm.
I know that's, I mean, remember when I was in school, that's how a lot of stuff came about, understanding depression and schizophrenia. What about addiction? Do you have any data on what we're learning?
Some of my colleagues have done work in that area, and we'd studied that at the University of Minnesota, and there is a genetic influence on that as well. Certain personality type, perhaps, lack of impulsivity, lack of self-control. Yeah, things like that, sure.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, everything has a genetic component at some level. Mm-hmm. Nothing is 100% genetic, but genetic influence is much more pervasive than we ever would have imagined, really.
Well, I think one of the things that I'm hearing, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that fraternal twins, in many ways, are like regular siblings in so many ways, genetically, in a lot of ways, behaviorally. It's almost as if they're straight siblings, although they happen to have been born at the same time.
Yeah, that's basically correct. The fact that they're born at the same time is what makes them different, because people tend to compare and contrast, and they're going through development at exactly the same stage, whereas ordinary siblings go through things later on. So, yeah, biologically, they're the same, indistinguishable from from fraternal twins, from full siblings. That's correct.
So I have a.
I'd love to talk about my other book, Accidental Brothers, if we have time. But I'll leave that up to you.
No, we will do that. I was just about to go there, but there's one burning question that I have.
Oh, sure.
And this will be on behalf of somebody that will want to know the answer to this question, and that is there a particular developmental age where twins either become easier or more difficult? This woman is extremely nervous about the infancy and being able to handle two at once with.
Yeah.
Just unbelievably dependent on her. She will have some help, but what do you think has been shown?
Well, I'm going to say it more anecdotally, although I've heard this from many, many mothers, and that is when kids get to understand each other as social beings, twins do that earlier because of their close proximity. And so I would say that when your kids get to be about two and a half to three, they're going to become entertainers for each other. They're going to be each other's babysitters. And so that will free your friend, free the mother, to do other things. She'll have to be in the room, of course, to make sure they're safe. But they can play very quietly on their own. And that's one of the great things about having twins. Many people think that having them is twice as much work. And maybe in the beginning, it's a little more work. I wouldn't say twice as much. But the nice thing is that you've got one pregnancy, one hospital bill. You've got diapers gone at the same time. I think having twins is a lot easier than having children close in age, where you've got dragged out diapers and feeding and all that sort of thing.
That's what I've been hoping that was.
And, but mothers will tell you, mothers and fathers will tell you, though, that and those are the parents who have single children and twins, is that having a single can be easier because you can focus all your attention on that child, whereas with twins, you're constantly dividing your time. And we know that twins do have some early language delays, not all twins, but some, identicals and fraternals, because they get less language experience with a parent, because parents are constantly dividing their time. So I always advise parents to spend some time alone with each child, and that way the kids will have more language experience and exposure.
Okay, awesome. Yes, I definitely want to hear about the new book that's coming out this next month, right? In April?
April 17th is the deadline.
Accidental Brothers, the story of twins enchanted at birth and the power of nature and nurture. So let us know about that one.
Yeah. Well, this is a book that's coming out April 17th, and this book tells the amazing life story of two sets of twins born in Colombia, South America in 1988. And it turned out that one pair was born in Bogota, which is the capital city. Another pair was born in a very small, remote village about 150 miles to the north. They were born just a day apart. One of the boys up in the north was very, very sick at birth. So when he was 1 day old, his grandmother brought him to the better hospital down in Bogota. And somehow he got switched with one of the twins in the other pair.
Wow.
So when an aunt was scheduled a week later to bring him home to his parents, she was given the wrong baby. Mm. And so these twins grew up not as identical twins, but as two sets of unrelated pairs. And everyone used to joke with them that they looked so different, but, you know, people understand that fraternal twins do not look alike. And then when they were 25, the ones in the north had been living in Bogota for a while, and they had jobs working in a butcher shop, not in the heart of the city, but sort of toward the borders. And someone who knew the Bogota twin quite well, one of the Bogota twins, went into that butcher shop. And she saw what she thought was her coworker behind the counter.
Oh, no.
And she thought, what is he doing here? Maybe he's moonlighting as a butcher on weekends. And so she called him Jorge, which was what his name was, but his name was William. And they went back and forth on this for a while, and she took a photograph of him, and when she saw her coworker the next week, they just kind of had a laugh about it. Nothing really happened for about a year. But somehow the story got revisited, and this woman and her friend, who was dating William's cousin, began to look into this in a lot of detail. And they discovered things like the twins who were the butchers didn't look alike, but one of them looked a lot like his full brothers, and the other one didn't. They discovered that the blood types matched between the pairs, but not within the pairs. more and more little clues like this began to emerge. And then when they discovered that one twin had been brought to the hospital, they first thought it was a different hospital. When they discovered it was the same hospital, that was basically it. And the amazing thing is that when one of the twins in Bogota was first shown the picture, he said, "My God, that's me in an outfit I don't own and a place I've never been."
Wow.
But what really struck him was the person sitting next to him looked exactly like his twin brother.
Oh.
So this is what really clinched it. And so they met, and, you know, it was difficult at first for some of them, as you can imagine, because suddenly your twin is not your twin, your family is not your family, your life is not what it was supposed to be, and someone else was living the life you should have led. But they have all adjusted beautifully by now. They have handled it with integrity, with grace, and they think of themselves as a band of four brothers. It's just really
fantastic.
A pleasure to be among such lovely four lovely young men.
That's amazing. Now, how did you come across them for your story?
Okay, well, here's how I got in touch with them. There's a woman who works at Columbia University who's also from Columbia, and she saw the story about them a little bit on a television program, and she knew of my work having read one of my other books called Someone Else's Twin, which is also about switch twins in Spain. So she contacted me and told me the story, and I was just amazed, because switch birth twins are rare as it is, but to have a double exchange like this is just incredible within two pairs of identical twins. So we decided to go down to Bogota together and to study them, and we went down together in 2015. Then I returned again in 2016 and did some more extensive research on them. And then I spent the last year and a half or so writing Accidental Brothers, which will be published by St. Martin's Press, as I said, in about 2 weeks from now.
What a fascinating story. Wow.
Yeah, this really was one of the most overwhelming things. And I have to tell you that this is how I work. When I discover a situation that really just hits me over the head, I have no choice but to go there. That's why I say in the beginning of the book that my boyfriend calls me a twin tracker, because I get drawn to these cases, and they are so informative and so fascinating that I just can't resist them. That's how it happened with the Spanish twins in 2010. I couldn't not go. And with these brothers, again, I just couldn't not go. It was too much of a draw, because not only were they identical twins raised apart, but they were unrelated, raised together of the same age. And one pair was raised in a beautiful, lively city, and one pair was raised in a very remote village. So you had the different environments. And it was almost like an experimenter's dream, the kind of experiment that you could never do because it could never happen. And yet it happened, and I found it. And I spent a lot of time writing this book, and I think that people will really enjoy the human interest as well as the science that's in there as well.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah, so again, we're talking with Dr. Nancy Siegel. She's the author of two books we've been talking about today, among many others. Twin Myth Conception, I got it right that time, M-Y-T-H Conceptions. And then her new book coming out in April, Accidental Brothers, the story of twins exchanged at birth and the power of nature and nurture. So that's so awesome. So because we just have a couple minutes left, if you could please share anything that we didn't get to highlight for you today that you did want to make sure our audience was aware of, aside from we'll promote your social media, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Well, just that I think that we all need to be increasingly sensitive to twins and twin development. Think about all the people who work with twins. I think that the research has shown that one, the genetic influence is pervasive. The two children in the family are going to be very, very different. And I think also, why do twins fascinate us? We haven't talked about that yet. I think they fascinate us because we all grow up believing and being told that everyone is different, that everyone looks different and behaves differently. And yet when we encounter two people who look and act so much alike, it challenges our beliefs in the way that the world works. We find ourselves just drawn into their lives, desperate to understand it. Now, for some people, such closeness and similarity may be suffocating. They may find themselves turned off by it, but they will be intrigued by it nevertheless. So I find, Dr. Deborah and Misty, that wherever I go, and, you know, a taxi cab or an airplane or anywhere, and people discover what I do, everyone has a twin story they want to share, and everybody wants to just hear about what I'm doing. And another thing I should point out is that when I began to get into this field, I never thought that this work would have any real practical application in a legal sense. And yet I have been a legal expert on many cases involving the death of a twin and injury to a twin and immigration in one case involving a twin from Russia. And the most recent cases I've been involved in have been cheating. I've encountered twins who have been falsely accused of cheating because they come up with similar answers on their papers, and the professors just point fingers and say, you're cheating. But what I do is I go to bat for them, showing that identical twins often do perform the same, they process information the same way, they make the same unusual mistakes because they see things the same way, and this is all partly genetically based, and it's exactly what I would expect. I would urge twins taking the same class, though, to sit apart, especially during exams. I think just for your own protection, that would be a good thing. But this thing, you know, twin research has practicality in terms of the work I do in twin laws, too, a medical malpractice. I've worked in a number of such cases, and it's a wonderful feeling to be able to know that I can help some of these twins in that respect. I have a large ongoing study of twin loss, too, by the way, and all of this is up on my website if people are interested in more information or they want to participate in some of the cases.
Yes, wonderful. And tell us, what is that website?
The website is Dr., just D-R, so it's D-R Nancy Siegel, Nancy's N-A-N-C-Y, and then S-E-G-A-L, twins, .org. So one whole word, Dr. Nancy Siegel Twins.org. And on my home page in the lower left, I have all my studies listed. I have all my books listed, some of my upcoming lectures. I will be giving a lecture on this at Page's Bookstore, and that will be April 26th. And I think it's going to be great. We're going to have some wine. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I just love hearing twin stories and learning. I learn all the time from those people who are closest to the topic.
It's Pages in New York City? Or are you in...
No, Pages in Manhattan Beach.
Manhattan Beach?
California.
Oh, California.
Locally.
Oh,
I haven't heard that bookstore in a long time.
So when is that event again, Dr. Siegel?
That's going to be April 26th. It's a Thursday evening at 7 o'clock.
Okay, great.
And I'm going to be talking only then about accidental brothers. We'll be having a book signing, question and answer. It's a free event, so wonderful. Bring the family. 7 o'clock, and there'll be a little reception afterwards as well.
Great.
That is awesome. Thank you so much for being a guest on our show. We really, really appreciate it.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I love the opportunity to talk about a topic that I just think is so fun and so informative.
And absolutely. That you obviously know so much about. So thank you for sharing all of your wealth of information with us.
You're more than welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
Yeah, so next week, actually, we have another food-related author. Yes, this is somebody that I've known for a very long time. Her name is Carolyn Costin, and she's the author of 8 Keys to Recovery from an Eating Disorder. And she also has a workbook and a book. And she also runs a eating disorder center called Montevideo.
Actually, Montevideo. I know Carolyn well. She actually sold that. So it was sold. Here in Malibu, yeah.
Okay.
But
yeah.
She's got, on the east side of New York, she's got a couple of facilities.
She's
there
got
too.
A bunch.
Great
she's
lady.
Done, she's done amazing work.
Stuff.
Yeah. All right. And thanks again to our guest, Nancy Siegel, from today. Fascinating stuff about twins. And Misty, I'm sure you're going to be back.
Oh, my God.
I love having you on. You're so much fun.
My head's so full, though, because I'm only a single. I'm not a twin. I can only hold a certain amount. Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye. Love you all. Till next week or whenever you want to listen to our show, because it's going to be a podcast in just a moment.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.